For July the 19th, 2019, we talk about Graveyard Keeper, Apocalypsis, and we ask you about your dream Blank Maker game. Welcome to Level 292. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jala.
Thank you. It's been some time.
Yeah, it's good to have you.
Yeah. So how's stuff with everybody?
It's going okay. Because it is always the cat hour. I had to clean up my second cat mess. Apparently she swallowed an elastic string and deposited it right in front of her litter box. So that was fun.
Yeah, at least she was trying.
Yeah, she got it in the ballpark. I mean, yeah. That's better. You know what Rami, who is a little shit, has been doing lately? He has been literally flying over to me and then taking a dump. As soon
what?
As he's on me, he is just coming over and just like, he's saving it, I swear. And I'm like, oh my God. Like I, and it's partially, I think, because my dad was in the hospital all of last week. And so, nobody was home. Mm. We were like, my dad was at the hospital. My mom was, you know, at the hospital visiting. I was working and then at the hospital and then trying to like, batten down the hatches and trying to pay attention to the animals and care for them too, but yeah. Only so much energy left at the end
there's
of the day.
There's
so much time. Yeah. So I think that's his payback for us being away all of last week. Is he's just decided he's gonna come and just take a shit.
Oh, jeez.
Like, okay, thanks. Like the equivalent of somebody like leaving a flaming bag of dog poop on your yard or on your doorstep.
Yeah, we call that a Missouri hello.
I basically have an anti-Rami poop jacket, which is basically one of my running jackets that's like a really light material that slips off water and stuff. And like he hates to sit on it, but also everything slicks off of it, so it's real easy to clean.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get clothing wet, so I just wear that. Kids.
That's...
Pets being brats or just otherwise being babies.
Well, you know, being
being like turds. That meme, yo, I sits thin shits.
Right. That is truth there.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's I've got other stuff going on. I went to a shooting range over the weekend.
Oh. Whoa.
Yeah. No, I've been a couple of times, like, but the last time it was like 5 years ago. Yeah, no, I went with some family, and that's fun and scary.
You shoot?
So I shot. Let me see if I can. It was a 9mm. Mm-hmm. It's like a Taurus or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brazilian gun manufacturer.
Yeah. And even scarier, there is an assault rifle 15 in the family. And I've good.
As a side note, it does not stand for assault rifle.
I know. Right. That is a joke that I do specifically to make people angry. Yeah, no, but just for me, it's illustrative. There are two things. Like, one is, have you ever been good at something that you did not realize you were good at, and you don't know how to feel about it? Because I'm not a bad shot.
That's particularly I'm assuming with the handgun.
No, both.
Because the reason I asked that is that's something that. Clearly not everyone, but like the vast majority of people cannot just like it takes some doing to get used to that and to be able to like do it without flinching, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I had good grouping and all of that, and I don't know where that comes from, because it was like 5 years ago, and then like as a kid was the last time I did that. And the other thing was like, okay, if I'm going to have the stance that I have about these things, I would like for it to be, I would like for it to be informed. And so I can confirm that an assault rifle 15 is a fucking scary device, because the thing itself is so light that it feels like it's an arcade, an arcade gun. And the physical feedback that you get from it, just from firing it, you know, the kickback and the recoil and all of that, it is very light, much less than the actual sound that you get and just the apparent destruction when it hits the backstop.
Good 223 or 5.56 is a fairly small rifle round.
Yeah.
So yeah, it tends to be a very, very manageable as those go.
Yeah, no, but just the disparity between that, it's like I could probably fire this all day, but every other sense besides feel is telling me this is a nightmare machine. So like it was very educational to do it, and I don't know that I wouldn't do it again. Just because, you know, it's just sport, whatever. But yeah, it was definitely a thing.
Very cool.
Yeah, but that's my that's my outing. That's my junkie.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I think that's really cool, cuz I mean, as someone who probably obviously kind of has a little bit of the opposite thing, like I do think a really big thing is, I think, you know, people are better off, you know, I think it's good for people who are kind of more opposed to those sorts of things to experience it, if nothing else, to understand, like, it truly is not just in like some sort of like crazy redneck type way, but like a very real way, a very empowering experience.
Yeah.
And so like, I think it can be helpful to understand, you know, even if one ultimately concludes that they're still opposed to it, like why it is so important to people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think's huge.
Yeah, for sure. And all of my experiences with these things, you know, one was a range in Cincinnati that I went to with my brother. And this one was with some family up here. I've been impressed with like just the general state of upkeep and the obsession with safety and process and things like that.
So,
like, yeah.
I have a theory with these sorts of things, and I'd be interested to, I've always been interested to kind of know if there's any sort of like, if, you know, any sociology has ever done something or something, but kind of my theory is that, you know, a person who's with inside a certain culture, you know, so like gun culture, Christian culture, or something like that, progressive culture, you know, tends to build up sort of a, like, you know, antibodies. And so one of the things I've noticed is, like, for example, you know, I grew up in the church, and so, like, I naturally can tell, like, if I'm interacting with, like, a church and it's, like, you know, like, crazy, super fundamentalist type thing, like, and I almost don't even notice, just because I naturally just like will kind of move on type of thing. Whereas people, you know, friends who, you know, aren't Christians or something like that will kind of just like walk in blind to get like blindsided by people being awful.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a similar thing with guns, where I think there's a degree to which it's like, there's some statistical thing to which like, a significant number of people who deal, you know, are handling guns are doing so like irresponsibly. But if you're within the community, by the very nature of being within a community that considers that important, you almost certainly don't see those people, so it creates this weird kind of bubble effect.
Yeah And I didn't walk into it expecting it to be like the King of the Hill, you know, Arlen gun club of thing. No, it was I was really impressed, you know, just from a from a sociologist. It sounds like I went on a redneck safari. Not how I want to sound. It was just it was educational.
Because I mean, both of us grew up in kind of this culture type thing. So it's not like, you know, even then it's, you know, it's not like you're like, I don't know, slumming it or, you know,
Yeah. So I just I make no new outward judgment about my stance on this. It was just a very educational and a very educational experience stepping out of my comfort zone in that way.
Yeah. And hopefully just to disclaim it a bit, because these tend to be emotional things, like the comments I'm making, I'm intending to be very positive and complimentary. I hope that's how it's coming across.
I
appreciate that.
Yeah, no, that's a, I didn't read anything into it.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, Jala, what have you shot?
I haven't gone to a range in a really long time, but anyway, I don't know.
Don't they kick you out of Texas for that?
Well, I can tell you that there's a number of different guns that my dad keeps in the house, but I have not actually gone shooting in a long time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, and that's just because we don't live in a great area, and I have a fun story about my dad actually protecting us when I was little from people who were invading our house.
That doesn't sound like a fun story.
Yeah, but it's not a fun story, but that's why there are guns in our house. Anyway, that aside, on that note, actually, a friend of mine that I know from high school happened to find human remains about 5 miles from my house, and I'm talking like a skull and a shoe with a foot in it. So like,
gnarly. Good God.
That's thing, and like he posted pictures on Instagram, and then he called the cops, and like basically
in that order,
there is now like on the local news and everything, there are following that story, they're doing autopsies to figure out who that is, and hopefully that gives somebody some closure. But that's a thing. I don't know what else has been happening. there was a flood. I chopped up my pinky. I almost cut off like all the meat off of one of the ends of my fingers. Also, Windows 7 finally murdered my old hard drive. So in order to keep working and not potentially lose everything on my hard drive, I had to go buy a second hard drive and install Windows 10 on it.
Yeah.
And then I went to VegFest. That's about the only nice thing I have to say. Everything else is terrible. But and then I hit a lot of PRs when it comes to lifting stuff. So I am very strong. And this is the last week of my bulk. And I'm very happy because I'm sick of being bulky. I want to be myself again. This is not me. So I'll be happy when I am trimmed up and doing cardio and not eating all of this food. It's ridiculous.
is that the next step? So first you had the shred, now it's the bulk is next, like the
shred again. And okay, after I shred, then I'm gonna stay that way and go back doing like a mixture of different types of things. But I was doing like basically a bodybuilding weightlifting intensive basically. I've still got another couple of months where I'm going to be like, and now I'm on a cut.
Yes.
And I've got muscles. And then I'll be like, and wow, my muscles pop out. So it's like after I've built all the muscle these last 8 weeks, the next 8 weeks are going to be really fun. So
getting back to normal.
Yes, getting back to like a normal. My pants don't fit right, okay?
Yeah. Normal routine. Like it seems incredibly hyper focused, especially on things that you have not naturally preferred in the past, based on looking at Instagram photos and things.
Yeah, and like just the thing about it is that I don't like to do any one thing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do a lot of things, and I like to have variety, and so to do nothing but lift for a very long time. Like when I was on cut, I was running some, I was rucking some, I was doing, cardio kickboxing stuff and, high intensity interval training, plyometrics. And I was doing a bunch of different stuff. So I was content. I was completely happy on that because mm-hmm. Yes, the lifting was the main focus, but I was doing a bunch of other stuff. But on this bulk, you can't do all that because you're trying to gain weight.
Yeah.
And so like, and I also just don't feel it's healthy. Like I do not feel that it is healthy to gain this much weight this quick.
Yeah.
So, and my pants don't fit right, and that makes me upset. Yeah. And I want my clothes to fit.
Would you describe yourself as getting those gains, brah?
If you have only just noticed, David, then you're a little behind the times.
Having gotten swole?
Yes, in fact, I am really swollen and I hate it. I hate it. So, anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I even gained muscle on my cut, the first cut that I did. Mm. So, you know, like I've been gaining muscle steadily this entire time.
Yeah.
So, as a result of that, I'm considering possibly cosplaying She-Hulk.
That'd be very good. How much?
I mean, like, who could I really cosplay? I mean, really. And don't say Chun-Li because I hate Chun-Li and I'm never doing it.
No, I know you hate Chun-Li. I'm not going to.
Just for anybody else.
I don't want to get hit.
Yeah, exactly. I will find you and I will smack you. Yeah. And it will hurt a lot worse now.
especially now. God.
I feel like threatening violence against people is not an effective strategy for discouraging Chun-Li suggestion.
I was the one who implied she would exercise violence on me, I think.
I exercise everything, including violence.
Yes. Oh. Oh, David, what's up?
Not too much. Honestly, not too much one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Kind of the big thing kind of in my life has been, the group I do martial arts with, the big, yearly, gathering is coming up. Mm. And so that's not something I'm fighting in, but it's, you know, something a lot of the people I'm training with are fighting in. So it's kind of been, you know, just kind of doing a lot of, you know, training with them, kind of putting the finishing touches, you know, figuring out what their game's going to be, you know, kind of that sort of thing.
That's cool.
So that's been, a lot of what I've been up to. I don't know, just kind of continuing on.
Yeah. Learning to be more deadly.
I realized that I said that my dad was in the hospital really casually and moved on.
Okay.
And people are probably wondering about that. I just want to say real quick that he is about as okay as he can be. He has a few different issues and like he had fallen and passed out and, you know, they found out he has a couple of ulcers and he has had breathing problems. He is now supposed to be on oxygen all the time and they're trying to heal up his ulcers, but he also has back issues and needs to take pain medication, cannot because of the ulcers, and therefore is just kind of like laying low.
Mm-hmm.
So for anybody concerned, yeah, my dad's okay. About as okay as he can be. We are just taking it one day at a time. He is stable. That is the main important thing. So
yeah.
I didn't mean to sound flippant or anything.
No, so. And I didn't want to press you on it because it's obviously
yeah.
serious and private. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah. So there. Sorry for interrupting. Continue talking about being deadly.
No. I mean, I was just lamenting that everybody's getting more deadly besides me.
You know how to fire
you
guns.
Shot guns.
Yeah, I was gonna say actually.
So that's just latent. I didn't get more deadly. I just discovered new deadliness inside me.
I feel like that's if I could remember it, that's where I'd do a riff on like the Bane quote. But
you adopted the darkness. I was
born into
it.
Deadly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, how are you, Ben? How are you working on your deadliness?
Dog, I just ate a salad. I haven't been doing anything to be more deadly. Like, I'm my life has been tame and boring, and that sounds good right now. So.
Yeah. No.
Yep.
Yeah. Boring is good. Boring.
You mean
good.
No human remains? I'm disappointed.
Not that I know of. Somebody got stabbed in our area, but that was like a bar fight, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Dude, there was an article, I posted it in the Slack for those damn Ross kids a while back.
Oh yeah.
Of there was just like a gator that they found swimming around out in like Sugar Land, which is about 40 minutes away from me, and it just had a steak knife sticking out of its head.
Hardcore.
somebody just like went down on it with a steak knife. They're actually trying to find the person who did it because like they want to prosecute them for trying to, you know, big game hunt it
with
or
a
something.
With a steak knife.
But,
God.
Yeah, I'm just like, I bet somebody was grilling in their backyard and this little, like, you know, this gator just rolled up and the guy was not having it. A guy or girl or whoever was just not having it. And they were just like, I got a knife. I'm going to just stab him with this steak knife. I was going to use it on this meat that I have on the grill, but
There's some meat walking right over there.
Yeah, that's my scenario in my head. But I mean, you know, it was just inexplicably. There was a gator with a steak knife.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you gotta let them know that meat's not for you.
No. You don't defend your, if you don't defend your claim, people are gonna take it.
Rolled up. This is, I guess, the gator version of the rolled up newspaper, smacking them on the nose.
Yep.
See, I think my favorite recent news story out of Houston was the people that broke into a abandoned house to smoke some pot and found a tiger inside.
Well, did they share?
Yeah, that was a good one. Oh, and by the way, I did post the image. If you guys want to see it, I post the report.
Oh, wow. That's a big knife. So they're a big knife or a little baby gator.
Yeah, and they were trying to stab it out. So, all right. Oh,
it's a unicorningware. I don't know that corningware makes knives. That was a bad joke.
Not when I'm drinking. I almost choke.
Well, that sounds like banter. Why don't we go ahead and get started? We got the usual kind of show for you. With the grind, the multiplayer, and then rounding out with the M boss. Let's get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing. Jala, you've been away the longest. What have you been playing over the past period of time or so?
I've been playing a whole hell of a lot of stuff. Yeah. So I'm just going to talk about like the most exciting ones, I suppose, or what I consider to be. So a couple of updates on a couple of things. Oxpath Traveler. So I went back to playing that again.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished all of the rest of the Chapter 4 quest, and I unlocked the endgame. But I looked at a webpage about prepping for the endgame content, and it said that the end forces you to use all the characters and that every one of them needs to be at, like, level 70-ish.
What the fuck?
Now, my lowest level character, Tressa, is level 48. My highest level is Therion, who is level 73, but most of the characters are about level 60 or, like, high 50s. And so there's a couple that are, like, in the 40s. And then there's some in the 60s. And, like, if I have to use all the characters, I'm SOL unless I grind like hell. So I stopped playing it again immediately.
Yeah.
And I want, if somebody who is listening to this has played this game and they know about the end game content, please contact me at Jalachan and Places and tell me if this is accurate about the end game content, and do I actually have to grind up to this level to finish the game? Because if not, you know what? I think I've finished the game.
I think so too.
I don't want to go and grind. No. You can't go back after you start the end game. You can't go back and backtrack and do anything. So that's why I stopped. Even though I wasn't sick of the game, I do not want to grind. So that's my boat, man.
It's ironic how the presentation makes the game so attractive, but all the gameplay decisions just make it very unattractive and try and hurt you.
That is 100% the best way to say that, because, you know, like, I like the game. I do. But what the hell with this? This is not a good thing. And I did do all of the side quests. There are no side quests left for me to do.
Yeah.
So it would literally just be going out into an area and grinding. And if anyone messages me and tells me about it and says that I need to grind, don't tell me a place that I can go to grind.
No.
I'm not doing it.
No. Like, even a half hour is too much.
No, I don't want to do the thing. So please confirm. Tell me, like, if I can scrape by at a lower level, then I might tolerate it long enough to just get through the end game or, you know, try it or something. But I don't have the extra classes, like the special secondary classes, mostly because I was told that the fights for those, you have to basically be in like 50, like the high, you know, mid-level 50s, 50 level. And some of my characters aren't. And I'm like, I don't feel like messing with that.
Yeah.
So I did not get the extra secondary classes either. So if that's going to be a thing where I have to go back and get those, I might be able to tolerate that, but I don't know if I can tolerate any extra crap on top of that.
Yeah. That's
so
I understand this is the appeal for a lot of people playing this kind of game. You know, it's a throwback. Having you have a fully leveled, like fully and evenly leveled team to take on the end game, that's really antiquated.
And the thing about it, here's the irony. There is actually a game within which I will always evenly level all my people. That's Shining Force.
Yes.
The only game that I do that on. The only one. So, and I don't even know why, but the compulsion was there from the very first time I played the game to evenly level everybody. To the point that when I was little, I actually would get some of the characters that you start out at like level one unpromoted. And I leveled them up from level one unpromoted to like being equal to everybody else before I proceeded with the rest of the game. So like that's how dedicated I was to getting everybody to the same level. But not on Octopath. I do not feel that excited about that.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing that I've been playing.
Okay.
So the next thing that I've been playing, I've talked about it previously, but not the second installment. Hakuoki, the visual novel game that I like, that I played a very long time ago, and then I played it again on a different version that was like the updated version. And then now they re-released it again with expanded characters and storylines and stuff onto the Vita. Mm-hmm. And like fairly recently, it was like, I think the second section of it came out last year, because they split it up into two games. I finished the first one, Kyoto Winds, and I did not start Edo Blossoms yet. Well, somewhere in there, when I was feeling very stressed, a visual novel seemed like the thing to play. So yeah. I started playing Edo Blossoms, and I cleared about three of the character stories. One character that I had not played yet, and then two characters that I had played before that were just my favorite characters. And bear in mind, there's 13 characters that you can go through the stories for, so there's a lot of content left.
Yeah.
I have barely brushed the surface on it, but I basically put it back down again after I got over that little crisis period, because I wanted to play something more active.
Yeah.
So I don't have a whole lot to say about the game other than I still love this game. There is a lot of added scenes. There are a lot of added scenes and a lot of added characters that make this very worthwhile to play. And I've said it before, but although this game was originally released as an Otome game, which is basically sort of like a romance theme, you know, like there's romance in it, you can turn the romance off.
Yeah. It is then it's like a war and intrigue story, right?
Yes, it's mostly like it's war and intrigue, but also supernatural horror. I've talked about it before, but there is just a lot of death. There are oni, there are rasesu, which are basically like rakshasas from Hindu legend.
Yeah.
And who are like kind of vampiric in a way.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, they have
vampiric shapeshifters.
Yeah, well, and they have a lot of like monstrous things that go on and horrible, horrible things. Like, I've shared tidbits of the story before, and it's like, this is not really a romance game. So that's why it can stand up on its own without the romance, which is why it's an option. And you can turn the romance off if you just do not want to see it.
Huh.
But it's a really good story, and I'm actually looking forward to playing the rest of it. But like I said, I stopped playing that so I could play something with a more active thing. Because I've been playing like a JRPG for
a
very long
time. Already pretty lean back. Yeah.
And then I was like, I scaled back even further to a visual novel, and I'm just like, I want to jump and stuff.
I'm going to play a painting next.
Yeah. So naturally, one of the things I played after that. Like, I did play some other things in between that I'm not going to talk about today. So it sounds like I just went from a visual novel to a point-and-click adventure game, but I didn't. There were action games in between. But I want to talk about this game that I finished called Apocalypsis. So it's a point-and-click horror puzzle game with very marked medieval woodcut art style and really moody and melancholy sound design to it.
Mm-hmm.
It is from a Polish indie dev called Punch Punk Games. I have no idea what else they've made, if they've made anything else. Basically, in this game, you play as Harry, which is a guy who is trying to save his girlfriend, Zula, who is accused of being and is actually a witch.
Hmm.
Now, the story is told mostly through wordless narration, although there is, like, there are little cutscenes in between where you see, like, a scene shown through Harry's eye. Like, the frame around the scene is, you know, his eyelid and everything, mm-hmm. as if it's in his face and you're looking into his eye. And there is a little bit of, like, voice narration there that has some subtitles, but that's the only place that there's any words. So, one article that I read about it referred to the tone of the game as carefree pessimism.
Okay.
And I thought that was funny at first, but actually, since it's medieval and dark and gory, that actually fits pretty well. It kind of feels like a Grimm Brothers fairy tale,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, the puzzles in the game are mostly visual logic and pattern-based puzzles. Sometimes they have some logic to them that is really adventure gamey, and by that I mean opaque and not necessarily intuitive.
they have but some logic that is not logic.
Some logic that is not logic that you're just like, okay, that's a stretch. But still, it's overall not super hard. It's a nice, short little game that doesn't overstay its welcome. It's about 3 hours, I want to say. So there's a second short game also attached to it that you can select from the main menu that is from the second character's perspective, from Zula, the witch lady's perspective. So I fully completed the entire thing. There are multiple endings to it. I think there's two, but I got the true ending. So,
no.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, I don't know how, what else to say about it, because there's not really much, because it's very minimal on the story, very story light. And, you know, like, the puzzles, I obviously don't want to talk about those. And plus, they're kind of like, since they're visual puzzles, it's hard to, you know, give you any indication or make you excited about it. But, Cole, perhaps you can just describe your reaction when you saw my screenshots and stuff, because I shared some in places. Seem to be very excited about it. So
no, I mean, it just obviously it's very hard to get past the art style. Like, this woodcut kind of style is not something I've seen in this way. I'm probably, you know, it's probably been done before in some regard, maybe not for a whole book, but just kind of the subject matter of this. It is just really difficult to look away from. You know, and just the things that I see happening in it, you know, even down to just the puzzles and the hints that are kind of given as rebuses almost.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of seems like it is directly up my alley. This looks fantastic. I'm trying to decide if I want to play it on the Switch. It seems like that's how you played it. Is that correct?
That's how I played it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that it feels like it really should be on, because it's got a cursor, so it feels like it would be better on a computer than it would be elsewhere. But another game that is completely nothing like that, that I played a while back, that mm-hmm. I think kind of reminds me, at least stylistically, although sort of, but not really, Ki Resonance, which is, if you follow the link there, it mm-hmm. is basically like Dive Kick in that it's like combat, but it's focused on Japanese swordplay,
mm-hmm.
and it's one hit kills.
Yeah.
Just like Dive Kick. But it's a lot more complicated because there's stances, sword stances, and, you know, different ways that you can charge at each other and things.
Mm-hmm.
But the art style for that is kind of based on, you know, old Japanese ink prints.
Yeah.
You know,
the Great Wave and such.
Yeah. And in that way, it kind of reminds me of Apocalypsis, because that one is like old medieval woodcuts. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be a treat. I'm curious about the story. You know, just ideas of medieval witches, and I mean, even just seeing the plate doctors and the skeleton pope, apparently, and the giant fish.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah. I had to take a picture of that and share that skeleton pope, because that was pretty great. And like, honestly, the most fun that I had with the game was just seeing what kinds of crazy crap would be on the screen from screen to screen. And mm-hmm. I want to say that, like, insofar as that is concerned, the game is better on, like, probably up through about, you know, the middle to two thirds in. And then the last part of it, the art kind of gets less wild, I guess, because it gets a little bit more surreal because of where Harry is in his journey and what he's doing.
Based on that description, I was going to say, oh, this sounds like a Monoda games, like Machinarium or Samaros.
Yes, it reminds me a lot of Machinarium.
And I went to the Steam page to see how much it cost, $7. And they say, this is a point-and-click adventure game in the vein of Samaros to Machinarium. Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, this is a wish list.
Yeah. Why do you think, okay, whenever I go and actually post a thing in the Hex Crank, I don't usually post it in the Hex Crank. I usually post, if I'm posting screenshots of stuff I'm playing, I'm posting it in the level Slack. But if I put it in Hex Crank, that's because I know you want to play it. So.
Nice.
So, yeah. Any questions about that one?
No. I was about to ask, when am I going to play it? But that's not a question you can answer, so.
Right. Yeah. So it's a little tiny tidbit. So like, you could even probably play it on stream, although I don't know if this is such a minimalistic kind of experience that I don't know. But then again, like I've said that before, and then people have been like really excited to see you stream it. So I don't know. Pay attention to me. Anyway, but it's about 3 hours. So I mean, like, you could probably finish it in one session.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I did play something else that a lot of people are wanting me to talk about. I don't know if I have time to say it real.
You haven't been here for a while. Please do.
Okay. So the last thing that I've been playing that I will talk about this week anyway is Elder Scrolls Blades. So what? That is Elder Scrolls. If you didn't, go look in the level chat on Slack, scroll up, and you can see screenshots from it. It is an Elder Scrolls free-to-play mobile game, and it's action, first-person action game, as if you are playing a Skyrim or whatever, but simplified and pared down for mobile. And that's what it feels like, guys, with some conventions that are, you know, made for mobile gaming, which I'll explain in a minute. But it's beautiful. You have full character creation, including changing hair, eye, body type, face shape, and so on. There's basically a bunch of presets, and you can pick one rather than having sliders to infinitely change everything.
That's good.
You have skill trees and perks. You select how you want to level up and buff different areas. There's crafting, repairing, commerce. There is building up your town, because in the story, like, it starts with a powerful ruler that raises your village. And so, like, you come home and, like, your village is smoking, destroyed and wrecked, and you have to rebuild everything. So you have a block button, and you have buttons for whatever spell or physical ability you have equipped at the time. You can basically equip 3 spells and 3 physical abilities at a time, which are tied to your mana and stamina bars respectively. And basically, when you level up, you can select to up your mana or your stamina, depending upon what build you want to do. And, you know, you've got a whole skill tree, and then you can level up each of those abilities on the different nodes on that skill tree as you unlock levels. And you attack by pressing and holding, like tapping the screen and pressing and holding, and then releasing at just the right time when the circle fills up so you can unleash like a critical attack. And you can't sneak up on anybody, unfortunately, which is very sad to me because I love to sneak in Elder Scrolls. It's like my number one thing to do.
It's like one third of the way you complete that game.
Yeah, sneaking around and stealing everything and murdering people is what I like to do best. And like, I can't do any of those things in this game. However, it's actually very fun. And I actually am like the combat. Once you get accustomed to using your phone for it, it actually feels fine. Like it feels like I'm playing on my computer, basically. It's weird. Like it feels like I'm playing a Skyrim or whatever. And you can either hold the phone in portrait or landscape mode. And if you switch, the screen just switches, you know, following you. So whichever one is more comfortable for you, although of course landscape is better so that way you have like a larger field of vision.
The periphery, yeah.
But and so in the game you have like a main quest line that you can follow. There's also different jobs you can get. Like there's a job board in the town and you can get jobs from random NPCs to go do. So they're all side quests. They're called jobs in this. You also get extra daily and weekly jobs that pop up that have timers that you need to do it within a certain amount of time before it disappears. Mm-hmm. And those extra daily and weekly ones are special that give you extra goodies if you go do those. I'll talk about like all the loot system in a minute, but let me finish with the overview. So when you're crafting everything in your town, you can build a smithy, you can level up the smithy, and that's how you unlock new weapons and armor that you can craft. And you can also build, like, you know, an alchemy place, an enchanter's tower. You can build up the town and, you know, fortify it. And that you get prestige for your town, which allows you to build more stuff, you know, and level everything up. So basically that helps your character progress in, like, an indirect sort of way. There are like the main quest that you get to do and the jobs, but you also have the ability to go into the abyss, which is basically your never ending dungeon that you keep on going down levels. But as you go down levels, what it does is it gives you special goodies, special bonus items, which are randomized depending upon how many enemies you defeat. Like there's a quota before you get the next reward. And then every time you go down a level, you get bonuses to how much gold and how much experience you get, you know, like modifiers that increase as you go down levels.
Yeah.
So there's also the arena, but that's currently locked. This game is actually in early access, so it's not 100% full, but it feels like, you know, so far as I'm playing, it feels like a fully fleshed out game. So the loot system. So you when you're running around in the world, you can pick up food items and eat them only if you like are low on health. You can use health potions and stuff by quick tapping in combat or in your menu when you know, like when you're out of combat. What else? You can pick up some crafting items and sometimes armor or whatever. I think the armor is tied specifically to chests. Like you can get special, you know, like weapons and armor only through finding chests out in the world or earning them from doing jobs and quests. And those chests, now this is where it gets into the unfortunate mobile part.
Yeah.
Chests. You knew that was going to come because loot chests. So like basically... Sure. Everything is on a cooldown timer. When you are crafting something, it takes a certain amount of time before you can get that item from the crafter because they have to make it or whatever. So, like, if it's a low-level item, maybe it's 15 seconds. If it's a higher-level item, it takes progressively longer before you can get that item and start using it. When you build something in town, it takes a certain amount of time before it's built. It's not like you say you want a smithy and bam, there's a smithy and then you can start using the smithy. You have to wait for that item, you know, building to be built. When it comes to the chests, I don't understand the logic behind this one, but there's a cooldown on the chest. So the lower level the chest is, like the lowest level chest you can open, but there's a 5-second delay. And then I have a chest right now that it's going to take 6 hours before I can actually get the stuff out of that chest.
Okay.
But you have to basically push the open button, and then you have to wait for the timer to cool down. And the only other thing you can do to speed it up and get it instantaneously, because that's the snag, right?
Impatience stacks.
Yes, is to use gems to open it. Now, gems you can earn through doing quests, but you can also pay to play and buy gems from the store. So,
how many currencies does the game have?
It has gems and gold,
okay.
And that's it.
Okay.
And like you can, the gold is used when you are buying and selling stuff, and then also when you are creating new buildings in your town. And that is a lot more, you know, that's a lot easier to come across in the game because you pick up gold everywhere you go. The gems, you get those a lot slower, and those are mostly used for speeding up those timers. So you can play this game without speeding up any timers, but like I'm not buying gems so I can open up that chest. I'm waiting 6 hours, and whenever I get in there tomorrow, I'm going to open that chest and be like, okay, cool, and then move on to the next one.
Yeah,
you know.
So basically, but, what I'm hearing is that Khajiit has loot boxes if you have coin.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, and yes, you can play any of the races as well. Like you're not limited to race or any of that. And also, there's a guy in town where you can change your character. You can change everything about what your character looks like and everything at that particular guy in your town. So. That's cool because you can also respec, but that also costs gems. So like if you don't like how you have your perks and your points and everything, you can just respec everything and then, you know, start from zero.
Mm.
But it does cost gems to do that. And like I said, you do earn them from the daily and weekly challenges and things like that. Like there's also challenges. I didn't mention that, you know, just small objectives in the game, like kill this many enemies or do this many perfect combos or something, collect this many of this item, and then you know, unlock special challenge rewards. So there's a bunch of different ways to earn the currencies in the game. It's just that, you know, they also have the pay to play. If you want it instantaneously and do not want to wait, you can pay money. You can give them lots of money and they will give you lots of gems, and then you can, you know, do everything instantaneously. But I have not put any money into it. I am just playing it. I am like level 6 now. I've gotten down to the Abyss level 9.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having fun with it. It's all of the quests that you do are really short. Like they're 5 minutes or something, 10 minutes maybe. It's really designed for being a mobile game. So you get that kind of like immersive feel, like you're going through this dungeon and killing stuff and doing whatever the quest is, but it's over quickly. So it's not like playing an actual Skyrim where it takes hours, you know, to get through everything.
So do the quest lines have, you know, dialogue and story and stuff like that?
Yes. There is dialogue. There is story. There are spoken, you know, there's spoken dialogue in there as well as just text. So it has everything, all of that. So in that way, like I said, it does really feel like you are playing, you know, like Skyrim or whatever. But some of the environments seem to be kind of like, you know, like I know they're supposed to be randomly generated or something, but a lot of them seem like limited in how many different you know, corridors or whatever there are. Like some of it seems to get a little bit familiar when I'm going through certain areas. And I know some of the quests are in the same spots. So part of that is it's really the exact same map that's being reused for another quest. But one thing that I hope that they do as they expand and go out from early access is to add, you know, more, I guess, randomization to the maps. Like the environments are very markedly different. I've enjoyed wandering around in all the different places that I've gone to, and they've got different types of enemies and things. And, you know, it feels, you know, like I said, like a regular Elder Scrolls experience, but it's some of those maps just seem like they need, you know, they need more to them.
That sounds like a regular Elder Scrolls experience.
Yeah. Right. There are also, I didn't mention this, secret areas in some of the maps where, like, there is a candelabra on the wall that is kind of flashing, and if you pull it down, then you can get into a secret area that has an extra chest for you to get and things like that. So it does reward exploration as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, like, I'm enjoying it because it just makes me want to play an Elder Scrolls game, like a legit Elder Scrolls game. Mm-hmm. This one is Elder Scrolls Lite, you know, with some conceits to the mobile platform.
It sounds a little bit like Elder Scrolls mixed with Diablo to a certain extent, minus the multiplayer.
Yeah. So, and the arena is probably where there is that multiplayer aspect, but it's blocked right now. And I don't know if that's because it's in early access or if it's because I'm just not a high enough level. Like, I had to get to the point where I unlocked the abyss, you know, the endless dungeon. So I don't know if it's just because I'm not high enough level to do PvP or anything like that. But yeah, I do actually have like a unique code for my character that, you know, I can apparently share with people, because why else would that be there?
Yeah.
So I think they're planning to have that multiplayer, you know, versus or team battle as well. So, yeah. But I've been having fun with it for like something to play on my mobile. I have not at all been excited about the fact that Skyrim is on every system imaginable. However, because like I played it once and I played it so much that I got sick of it, right?
Yeah.
But playing this is now making me want to get Skyrim on my Switch just so I can play it in the same small format, like pick it up, set it down. You know? Like, that's the perfect way for me to play that type of a game.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, what they really need to do is they just need to release another like regular single player game.
Yes. They're working on it eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this doesn't sound like nearly as much of a mess as I was led to believe it was.
Mm-mm. No, I've been having fun with it. Like, I've enjoyed it so far. Just because it's like that bite-sized first-person Elder Scrolls, spelunking in the dungeons thing. Like, it scratches that itch. You know, I like my dungeon crawling, so... Nice. You know, like, there are things I wish I could do, like sneak, but, you know, it's mobile. There's only so much they can do.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't see how, like, sneaking is basically what Elder Scrolls is, though.
Well, not, like, maybe not for everybody, okay? Yeah.
But it especially surprised me just because, like, that was a lesson that the MMO learned, where, you know, initially, you know, you could sneak, but like, the stealing and stuff like that was very rudimentary. And then one of the ways they kind of made good is by introducing like a fully fleshed out thieves guild. So it's like, you would have thought they would have learned from that.
Yeah.
Well, it's still also in early access. They could add any number of things as things go on. I mean, it's, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what all they're going to do with it?
Just give me a mode where I can break into people's apartments and houses. That sounds like a joke, but I am deadly serious about that. Like, that is what I like about Elder Scrolls games.
There is a Thief Simulator game. You can just play that.
I know. Yeah. I haven't touched that in a while. So,
are we talking about Thief? Is Thief the Thief Simulator game?
No. Thief Simulator is really good. It is an indie-ish game where you play as a thief going around stealing from suburbs and stuff. It looks junky, like if you look at video or look at the Steam page, but it's actually good and fun. So,
yeah. I'm so disappointed that the people that made Payday, they're like World War II game was apparently crap.
Yeah.
Like if I could play Payday and not feel weird about killing, you know, hundreds of innocent people, that would be amazing.
Yep. Cool. Well, is that all, Jola?
That is all I'm going to talk about. I've been talking a while.
Yeah. Cool. David, you've been you've been away. What have you been playing?
Sure. Not a ton, really. I've been continuing to co-op with Greg and Jala on Vermintide 2.
Mm-hmm.
So we, I think, just finished Act two out of three of the base campaign. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, and yeah, so we've got about a third of the base campaign that we've, still got to do. So far, they do a much better job of doing some really neat, outdoor kind of wilderness themed levels. One thing I do miss is they don't have as many of just the weird levels as the first game. So, for example, one of the best levels in the first game was basically this Wizard's Tower, where the whole thing was an M.C. Escher type of architecture.
Continue.
And yeah, so you'd be running around and like all of a sudden you'd enter a room and you're like walking on the ceiling and stuff while, fighting hordes of rats.
Illogical Wizard's Tower. Tell me more.
Yeah. So that's, was one of the, fun things from that. And I guess, this time around, I haven't seen anything like that.
Okay.
Which is a little bit too bad, although, it's very much, that could be something they draw in. The core gameplay continues to be very, very strong, and, they've added to it a lot. So I know Jala and Greg unlocked their second and third classes, correct?
Yeah. Second and third classes. I played around with both of them a little bit, but I don't know. I haven't found my stride with exactly what one I like best yet.
Yeah, so each of the characters basically has one class that's focused on ranged weapons, one that's a tank, and then a third one that's... I guess generally DPS, although that also tends to be like the kind of the grab bag class. And it's interesting both because, it changes up gameplay a lot, but it's also from a story standpoint, they basically represent, distinct ways that the characters like choices could have affected who they could have became. So it's things where it'll be like the first class is generally like who they were in the previous game, kind of the standard thing, and then for a lot of the characters maybe for example for the witch hunter, the first class is kind of the witch hunter. It's basically just like this scenario in which he from his feats in the first game, got a promotion within the order and is still kind of the status quo. The his second class is basically this scenario where instead of being recognized by the order, he was kind of shunned for bringing to light the Skaven, who basically according to the dominant religion like officially don't exist, and so that class is basically the scenario where he left the order and became a like freelance bounty hunter. And then the third one is basically a scenario where he kind of goes in the opposite direction and just like becomes just this like crazy zealot that kind of said says screw you to the power structure of the church and just becomes becomes his own way, kind of fundamentalist crazy person. And there's similar kind of arcs for all of the characters. So that's kind of an interesting way to do it.
Yeah. How does that affect the way that they interact with each other?
So that's one weakness, is that from what I've been able to see, for the most part, it doesn't. you know, the main way I've seen where it does is, you know, that you'll have call outs when you use your special ability, which obviously, you know, differs. However, it doesn't seem like the characters really recognize that in just their, you know, banter.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for most of the scenarios, that, you know, it's fairly understandable because, you know, it's kind of things that can go either way. But a couple of the characters have scenarios where it would represent like a dramatic, you know, a dramatic shift for, you know, the character that doesn't make sense that the status quo is maintained.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ones that's kind of interesting is one of the interesting lore items for dwarves in 40K in Warhammer is, you know, their culture is very oriented around, you know, honor, you know, kind of those sorts of things, you know, family honor and shame and
honor
that sort
in
of thing.
In a fantasy setting?
Well, you know, as you do. Yeah. It's actually, though, you know, kind of interesting because they, you know, it being Warhammer, they really, really play it up. So each of the dwarves, like, keeps a book where he writes down, like, in-depth, you know, documenting kind of where he stands in terms of, you know, who's wronged him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things where it's like, you know, such and such, you know, returned the, you know, pickaxe he borrowed 5 days late. He said he forgot about it, but I know that was really retribution for when, you know, 40 years ago, my ancestor, said he didn't like his hat. Or, you know, something like that.
Long books. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, kind of, you know, obsessed with that. But then if someone dishonors themselves, there's also a very strong cultural taboo against suicide. So they can't do like the samurai seppuku thing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the, you know, really popular kind of story elements is they basically have what are called slayers, which is people who basically have determined that, you know, in order to, you know, avenge their honor, they basically develop a death wish and go out and attempt to find progressively more difficult enemies to fight until, you know, eventually they either just become crazy powerful warriors or, you know, die.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the character things. It's like, it seems like that's not something that you just like completely throw away your old life and like no one would comment on.
So I know that an extensive emphasis on lore and backstory is a thing for Warhammer. It seems, does this affect the play at all?
In what way?
Oh, I just mean, so the there is an awful lot of detail put into each of these, you know, individual characters. Does this inform what you do in the game?
I would say, you know, less so from a strict gameplay standpoint. Mm-hmm. Other than just, you know, the actual events and, you know, things like that. Although I will say one of the areas where it is kind of interesting from a lore standpoint is all of the enemies you're fighting, all of the kind of their equivalent of the special infected,
mm-hmm,
are, you know, despite in many cases, you know, kind of mapping very closely to the, you know, Left 4 Dead, you know, kind of classic, you know, exploders and, you know, AoE shooters and, you know, lickers and, you know, that sort of thing. They're all unit types that have been around for, I guess it'd now be decades within the war game.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool. I'd say more though, the storyline and lore tends to be in the dialogue, there's a lot of, you know, minor things that shout out you'll only necessarily get if you know some of the lore.
Mm-hmm.
So, characters will, for example, occasionally, reference, some of the names of the deities. So, for example, when you find medication and call it out to your characters, sometimes they'll, instead of referring to it like, oh, here's a healing potion, they'll say, oh, here's Xiaoya's gift, who Xiaoya is the deity of healing.
Mm.
Or similarly, the elf and the dwarf will both, speak a significant amount of their dialogue actually in Elvish or Dwarven.
Hmm.
And so not say like whole sentences, but there's things where like the words for like the dwarf will often refer to his the other players, for example, as using the dwarvish term for a non-dwarf, thing like that. So it can be, if you aren't paying attention, you kind of have to learn what the translation is to make sense of some of the shout outs.
Do you have any cool, did anything cool happen while you guys were playing co-op, like just any near misses, things like that?
Jala, any suggestions for play of the game?
No.
No fun was had.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a dumb question or not. So yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, it's definitely a very legit question. I'm trying to think if there's been any like specific things. I think recently it's more been kind of just the moment to moment type of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They have really upped a lot of the physics for the enemies, particularly when they're like running at you in mass, which
that's
pretty cool. So there's been a lot of times where, we'll have to kind of take our stand and, find, say, some natural choke point and, hold it against enemies. And that's, a lot of fun.
Hmm.
Yeah. And like we had that miserable fail of a time when we tried the higher difficulty with 3 people and that didn't go so well, but also we were trying the new classes at the same time. Yeah. I think I will be happier when we have a full party again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of the little AI guy, he falls off of the ledges and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're AI guy. Like, yeah. So,
yeah.
But anyway, that just means that Dulce needs to come back. She's been doing stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the one,
her and her
the one
honeymoon.
Ugh.
Anyway,
the one that I think's a little bit too bad and could maybe be tightened up just a little bit is when you up the difficulty. It seems like it dramatically decreases the number of items you'll find, healing, stuff like that. And it also significantly, not so much dramatically increasing like the, big hits you'll take from like special infected, but dramatically increases kind of the incidental hits you'll take.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very easy to get taken down by attrition. And it seems like to a degree that's maybe just a little bit excessive in terms of a difficulty spike. Not so much something that would be excessively difficult like over time, but having it be, we're basically in a situation where you know, will either fairly easily complete a level, like, you know, first time, often without anyone dying, or like not be able to complete a level at all if we up the difficulty.
Yeah.
So it seems like it you know, would be nice if they had some sort of in between, but you know, whatever.
We've been going for a little while. Is there anything else that you've been playing?
I've been continuing on Fallout, although, you know, not anything real big into that we need to go into. I'm currently kind of tracking down the, you know, the Brotherhood of Steel quests, which is interesting because it's all about the actual founding of the Brotherhood of Steel and how they went from being like the remnants of the U.S. Army to, you know, being this sort of like techno cult. But probably I'll have, you know, kind of more to say and, you know, be able to speak to it more broadly next time.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
I got a light, easy week. I've been playing the same things that I was playing last week. I have the same opinions that I have of them of last week. Assassin's Creed Odyssey is still good. I'm still playing through it. It's still a very sizable game. I think I'm at level like lower 20s, low to mid 20s. Yeah, that game's still a lot of fun. So I'm still playing that. I played Grim Dawn a little bit more. That game's kind of dropping a little bit for me because, like, the story just hardly seems relevant at all. The combat system is not as interesting as I thought it might be since most of it... Grim Dawn. It's yeah, it's like a kind of Diablo-like game. It's kind of like Divinity Original Sin, but the combat system's not as complex. But it's like a top-down type game.
Yeah, that's actually another... Isn't that another Warhammer? Or am I thinking of something else?
It might be. I don't know.
Or if nothing else, it looks a lot like one.
So, some of the classes are like Eldritch horror type person. I forget what the name is for that. There's like a pyromancer type person. I don't know if those are Warhammer people or not, but it might be. Anyway. And then I played Slay the Spire a little bit over the weekend too. That game is still awesome, and still makes time go by very, very quickly when you play it. So have to be careful when you do that. So yeah, that's all I got.
Cool. Yeah, I know that makes time melt kind of thing is something that getting rarer for me with games.
Yeah.
Last time it really happened for me was Frostpunk.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah.
For me, I only have one, and that is more Graveyard Keeper. This is a really neat game, but Stardew it ain't. So, because there is only one Stardew Valley, it is you might be looking for a substitution. It has a lot of the same kind of beats. There is an additional complexity, to a lot of what happens here. New dependencies, extra things, steps between crafting things, inventory complications, just with the number of parts and intermediate parts you need to carry around, things like that, that make this a little bit more of a planning challenge than Stardew Valley is. And planning is fine. However, when I am doing a farming sim like this, it is more about structuring the day and it is less about like hunting down every single ingredient that I need to have. So, the emphasis is less on tending and building and more on crafting and things like that. So when I characterized it last week, I feel I probably mischaracterized it by lack of, general exposure to it. However, it is still really neat. The NPCs, I think, are more interesting just by virtue of the fact that they have, like, individual quests that you're going to do for them, as opposed to getting a little bit of, like, different dialogue in different places while they're standing in different places and figuring out their likes for gifts and things like that. It is more involved, and that makes the game... overall feel more structured. And, you know, the kind of general dark and funny kind of aesthetic to it has not worn thin for me yet. Who knows how that's going to wear when I get to the expansion content and I am raising zombies to do menial work around the farm, you know, and go logging and work in the mines and stuff. Who knows? But it's really interesting, and I'm definitely compelled to continue going. It is just not proven to, it is not perfectly calibrated to become a time sink like Stardew was for me. However, if somebody played Stardew and it was like, yeah, this is like just way too frivolous, for lack of a better word, or way too unfocused, this might be what you were looking for, possibly.
There's not enough zombies in this.
They're like undead. There's like monsters and stuff to fight in Stardew.
Yeah.
You know, down in the mountains and stuff. Yeah, but that's Graveyard Keeper. I'm gonna keep playing it. Any questions about Graveyard Keeper?
No.
Okay. Let us move on.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Dennis asked, if you could have a Mario Maker style platform and the skill to use it for any gaming franchise, what would you choose and why?
Yeah, we got a lot of people. This is a popular question, so let's get going. Jeremy writes, well, the obvious choice is Zelda, which it looks like they're implementing kinda in the Link's Awakening remake, but I'd love a full game of making levels for the Lemmings-like Mario minis, the one with the toys that you have to guide to keys and doors. Yeah, no, I think that, I forget. If those are from Mario versus Donkey Kong, I feel like those games already had a strong level maker kind of thing, but it seems like you know this, so I will not. Yeah, it seems like you're familiar with this. I didn't know that the Link's Awakening remake had a creation thing. That is curious. Yeah, Ben, what does Brian say?
Brian says a troll answer, probably Gianna Sisters Maker, which is a game that was apparently very close to Super Mario Brothers.
people seem to like those games. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the scoundrel Brian, scoundrel Brian Wade is trolling us, though. that is the gray area he lives in. David, what does Devin say?
Devin says the Messenger, Metroidvania-style platformer, but could have more versatility in level designs, especially for speedrunners.
That'd be really interesting to account for, because the moveset in that game is so diverse. Mm-hmm. Any kind of Metroidvania-style thing, where you're accounting for that.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed, even outside of, like, an actual Mario Maker, which is, you know, tends to be a little bit, I guess, like gamified or simplified.
Yeah.
I'm kind of disappointed that there's not an equivalent of like an RPG maker or something like that. Like, you know, actually an engine that's just widely available for Metroidvania games.
Yeah. Don't know. And that's the secret to Mario Maker, is that the actual interface itself is as close to the game as possible. Like, to make a big version of a thing, you drag a mushroom on top of it, you know, mm-hmm. All those kind of just discoverable things. Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I'm a big Star Trek fan, but for many reasons, biggest being licensing issues, there has been no game that allows you to pick and choose from any era, any show, any person, any race, any ship. I'd love to have all that available in a game where you can create ship battles, RPG-style quests, and adventure stories like my favorite episodes. Man can dream.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a big dream. That's definitely not a thing that would ever happen, but, like, still.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. We didn't ask what game would be realistic. We asked what game did you want.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, like, he just says it so wistfully that it's just sad, and it's like,
I want
it
you...
won't happen. And like, the thing, well, it's not like I'm saying it like, you know, that thing that you like, haha. I like Star Trek, too.
No.
So, you know, like, yeah, it would be fun, but yeah, unfortunately, we are not getting that, but...
No. And I want people who want that to have it. It doesn't, it doesn't seem like it'd be a net negative for the world.
No.
Steven says, Metal Gear series will be fun to build bases, to infiltrate, and soldiers to knock out. 100% co-signed.
Yeah.
It's kind of disappointing that didn't become a thing just because they've got like 90% of that in 5.
Yeah. I just with kind of building and manning your home base, your FOB.
Yeah, like, yeah. I don't know. I'm disappointed, especially in the era where, you know, kind of the popular thing is the games as a service. Like, just do a spin-off that is just that, you know, the multiplayer aspects of 5, but made into the whole game.
Yeah. That's a little bit what Metal Gear Survive was kind of trying to be, but
yeah,
that was a mess on its own.
Kojima doesn't really make small games, though.
No. But
he also doesn't really make Metal Gear anymore, though.
Yeah, but Konami, who doesn't make video games anymore, but instead would be manipulating the corpse of Metal Gear like a marionette, would make a small game. I'm sorry.
Beautiful imagery, and it works even better for Metal Gear.
It does.
I love the idea. You know, Konami tries to you know, make an exploitative game, ends up making the most on point Metal Gear.
Ben, what does Rookie say?
Yeah, Rookie says, with a proper 2D Castlevania maker, I might never buy another game again.
Oh man, that would be fun.
Yeah, Castlevania 3 era. Give it to me, please. With those deterministic jumps. Yeah, no, I agree.
Nothing I like more in my game, the deterministic jumps.
Castlevania jumps are good.
Also, as a random thing from his profile picture, he is apparently a ninja warrior, which is awesome.
Yeah. Additionally, Rookie has an amazing name. We generally don't say full names on here. I'm not going to break that tradition. However, Rookie's name is Dynamite. Their last name isn't Dynamite. Continuing here, that was you, Ben. David, what does Dulce say?
Drew says, I suppose any Metroidvania style game can be turned into a Mario Maker style. Hollow Knight, Monster Tale, Kirby's Dream Land, I played that one a lot. Also, as Jeremy said, The Legend of Zelda. Sorry, it was abbreviated as like
T-Laws,
which threw me for a second, but I'm now on the wavelength. Anyways, as Jeremy said, The Legend of Zelda is a great and obvious choice. I'd love to see more of the Wind Waker art style. It would be super cute.
Yeah.
I feel like Kirby and Wario would both be ones that would be kind of... you know, hidden gems of this sort of genre.
Oh, there's so many different powers you can use. And you know, with that, more intricacies you can put in. Yeah, no, I agree. And like Legend of Zelda would be really good, you know, specifically like a 2D Zelda kind of thing, because they would be able to, you know, like, I feel like the fans would be able to make harder, more interesting puzzles than what Nintendo felt comfortable putting in. Yeah. Let's see, Jala, what does Mike say?
Mike says, Souls Maker. Imagine a really robust character monster creation menu in which you can custom build enemies, NPCs, and bosses. Beyond appearances, you can create movesets and context-specific actions like the Gambit system in Final Fantasy XII.
Honestly, with Bloodborne trying out procedural generation with the Chalice Dungeons, you could do. I really thought that they were messing around with doing something like this, with giving you the toy box to go in and mess around, you know, like a Doom level maker kind of thing, and either use pre-rolled enemies, or, you know, something like Mike is alluding to. I really thought that was where they were going to go. And given that they have never done anything like that since, I don't think we're going to get that.
Yeah, that's something that really disappointed me. I love the chalice word dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they seem to have kind of abandoned that. And you know, the Soulsborne genre in general.
They're coming back. Elden Ring looks I mean, we know nothing of it, so I will stop. I will stop wish casting. There we go. Let's see. Zach says Resident Evil, just keep it limited to the mansion from the first game, but let you design rooms, come up with traps, do zombie placement.
What, you don't want to, you don't want all those like crazy temples and stuff?
I want dogs jumping in every window.
Yeah. Just nothing but dogs. Sure. I mean, it'd be like when I did the RE randomizer for a stream.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
you have sharks flopping around in the kitchen and stuff. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says Castlevania is my choice because so much could be done with that style of game. I can imagine Kaizo Castlevania or even just a whole new game altogether. The answer is all because the new Bloodstained is all I've been playing since I bought it.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about that game. I need to play it. I want to play it. But you said that the Switch version is shit, Cole?
They may have fixed it. The Switch version reviewed very poorly for technical reasons, many of which didn't necessarily dissuade me. However, inconsistent frame rate is something people highlighted, and that would be a problem for that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be high. It doesn't need to be super silky smooth. It just needs to be consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had not heard of this at all.
Bloodstains?
Yeah.
Big Kickstarter success. David, you were going to ask what Kaizo meant?
Yes.
Yeah. It is just a name. I think it was like inspired by a creator or just a name of a particular map that they made. Specifically like incredibly just hatefully hard custom levels like from ROM hacks and things like that for Super Mario World. Basically things meant to fuck with you on purpose.
It's actually a word, but is it? You know,
okay. Yes. I had no idea. I didn't.
It basically, I want to say that it means something like reorganization or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In the custom level context, it is just something hateful.
Yeah.
Let's see, David, what does Austin say?
Austin says Crash Bandicoot would, which would allow people to make those levels where you run at the camera.
Why would you unleash more of that onto the world, Austin? What are you doing?
He says this, and I have flashbacks to Resident Evil 6.
Oh, bandicooting. Jolla, what does Warren say?
Warren says, Hitman. The new games already offer a ton of different ways to play, but I'm sure people could create some ridiculous scenarios and win conditions.
I think there's a limited version of that. Like, you can do contracts. Not yet. There's not a tremendous amount of control. Ben, you've played this, so you would know.
I am not familiar with the level maker in Hitman.
Gotcha.
But I have a scattered knowledge of that game, similar to the Assassin's Creed series.
Yes.
So from what I remember, this was from way back, but someone, you know, experimented with some of this. And I guess the way it works is you can play any of the existing levels and go in and just, you know, kill whoever and then designate that's the target.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know, when you share it, it basically is the normal level, but with this specific person designated as the target or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was for Duck Spring or Jawlade, I forget which one. I played Hitman for the first time, and people encouraged me to do a contract in Paris during the fashion show where you had to grab a gigantic antique battle axe and
I remember that
and get it across the mansion, and it was a clown show. I don't think I could do that, and you know, now having played all of the original game.
That's where you axed half of the population in the castle.
No, I would get it halfway across the just because people see you carrying an axe and like, hey, dude, what the fuck?
Which I feel like that's the difference between, you know, Paris and New York. Because, you know, I'm on my way to martial arts, like, very blatantly carrying weapons, and no one cares.
Well, you're white.
True.
Yeah.
That is also very, very true.
Let's see here.
So is it, man.
Extremely yeah. white. Although, I guess, in the story, he has a very mixed heritage, which makes him blend in everywhere, is what they say.
Yeah, you know, all those, you know, 7 foot tall, you know, bald guys with, you know, head tattoos.
Let's go around one more time. Joseph says, Pokemon, it's clear that with ROM hacks, people want to give their own spin on a Pokemon game. But I feel that the biggest hurdle, at least for me, is the actual hacking part. An official Pokemon maker would make for a nice interface that would allow anyone to design their own catch-em-all adventure. The trick with that would be, like, people would make trainer levels that just let them catch all of the Pokemon in the Pokedex. So it'd have to be, like, kept separate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to step in and be Mr. Practical. Let's see.
Okay. I did it to Greg.
Ben, what does Alexander say?
We all get to shoot down one listener's dreams, okay? Alexander says, Mass Effect Maker being worked into a future ME game as the Outer Systems could be very cool. It would get NSFFSW, in a hurry with some heavy curation, though.
That sounds like a feature to me.
Yeah. let's see. David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, Jak and Daxter. They would be great 3D platformers, and the ability to create your own worlds to challenge other people would be awesome. Sly Raccoon would IP a similar IP I could play with, too. Yeah. Or would be a similar IP I could play with, too.
Yeah, probably an autocorrect thing there. Yeah.
I'd say also Ratchet and Clank would be kind of a similar idea.
Again, I feel like there might have been a mission designer or a mission customizer at one of the later Ratchet and Clanks. Dennis, see, without Dennis here, there's just a whole generation of PS2 platformers that we have no insight into.
Yeah, I think at least two out of three of these, he's the only one among us who's actually played them.
Jella finishes out here with Dan.
Dan says, GTA, killing, carjacking, and good radio. That is all.
Yeah.
So actually GTA 5 basically has that.
Is it an interface or is it a development tool that they put in?
It's pretty much a development tool. So I know for sure with race maps, you can do a ton of different stuff with it.
Cause you're just setting waypoints, right?
Well, but then you also, though, you can put in like ramps and stuff, and it's gotten progressively more over the top to the point where if you want, you can simply say like set it in the desert and then have the entire thing just be ramps that are like, you know, loop-de-loos and, you know, 100-foot jumps and, you know, just crazy stuff.
Yeah. Had no idea. That's everybody. Just in the interest of speeding things along, I think that I walked into this not knowing my answer for this, but Metal Gear makes a ton of sense to me, specifically Metal Gear 5. If you just mix that up with a creation engine that's a little bit like the Infamous scenario creator, that would be good and fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben, how about you?
Not a realistic answer, but Knights of the Old Republic.
Ah, yeah. That'd be good.
You shut your own dream down.
Yep. That was my one.
Oh, David, how about you?
So I think, I guess one concept, two different ways you could go with the genre would be, you know, doing either a horror or a, you know, dungeon crawler, you know, really focusing on like the death traps and, you know, monsters and stuff like that. I think the big thing with it would be there's been several games that have sort of done that with a, like, one player, you know, plays as the director type of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like in practice that never actually works because, you know, that just doesn't scale. But if you could have a game that would actually allow someone to design, like, compelling levels, that'd be really cool. The other thing I think would be cool would be a Left 4 Dead-like.
What? What? I'm sorry.
Something to make your own rift on the Left 4 Dead-like genre.
Hmm.
That or maybe, you know, a version of Left 4 Dead where you're fighting just like-likes from, you know, Zelda.
it's Left 4 Dead, but it's all re-deads. It's just a very slow game. Nice. Angela, how about you?
I want to say Dishonored.
That's good. That is good.
Yeah, I feel like anything heisty would be.
Anything heisty. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Dishonored would be very good. So many powers to mess around with, trying to design around and for the blink skill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thumbs up. Awesome. Well, this was a good question. I think I saw somebody mention that this was similar to a free play that they put in at some point in the past. I do not have that message, though. So if that's the case, thank you. And thank you, Dennis, for suggesting this. And thanks, Jala, for posting it.
Yay.
Yep. If you would like to participate in these in the future, consider going to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
I mean, to be fair, if you'd like to participate in the future, you'll have to do more than consider, but yeah. Considering is the first step.
Yeah. Consider, like, and then do.
Found that like.
That's Cole's version of Eat, Pray, Love.
The end boss.
Oh, and now it's time for the unboss, where we talk about things in the world of video games that are exciting for us. Jala, kick us off.
So, Stranger Things now has an AR game sponsored by Baskin-Robbins?
That's really weird.
Okay, I don't know anything about Stranger Things because I don't watch anything, but here's the kicker. It's plays using 1985 technology. So I don't know how any of this works. However, it says, you know, the article that I read says that you need to use Telnet, a pre-internet technology developed in 1969. Like, you have to use Telnet to start it up. And the secret entrance to play the game is hidden in a 1980s themed ad for the USS Butterscotch, with a 1-800 phone number at the end. And when you call the number, there's an automated voice that asks if you'd like information on the flavor of the month, store location, or an important message from the legal department. And of course, you pick that legal department, and then you get a message that sends you off on your quest.
Yeah.
Most of the game is supposed to be played using phones and fax machines, and it also develops a chat bot that interacts with players while remembering where they are in the story.
Hmm.
There's new material being added every 24 hours with no end in sight until someone cracks the final code. So I don't know, like, there are people who watch the show that listen to the show. If you are playing this, tell us about your experience, because I'm curious.
This seems like something where the story of playing it would be far more interesting to me.
Yes.
Than actually doing it.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, definitely tell us. Entertain us with your stories about playing this Stranger Things AR game that is sponsored by Baskin-Robbins.
Yeah, they must go to Baskin-Robbins in the third season. There is a level of just hashtag brand engagement on that show that I understand is meant to give it some verisimilitude. Like, yeah, it's probably what 80s people in the 80s. Yeah, they probably ate Eggos. That's fine. But then you go to GameStop and there's like an Eggos t-shirt that is related to Stranger Things. Like,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, but that's interesting. It's good. It's cool that they committed to the technology of the time. Let us see. I've got one that'll be really quick. So some people have put together an HD remaster of Resident Evil 3. No, this is not Capcom. This is not them giving the RE2 remake treatment to RE3, although that is still rumored. These are some people who have done something similar with Resident Evil 2, where they have upscaled everything using the magical alchemy, the buzzword that solves every problem, machine learning, to sharpen all of the background asset textures, the pre-rendered backgrounds, sharpen the models and the model textures, and improve things like the matting and cutouts on different animations. You can do a search for this. It is just it is called the Resident Evil 3 Seamless HD Project. It is and while you're there, you can see like one of those like neat little slider comparisons showing you like here's the screen entirely in the old resolution and then up-resed. So this has me really wanting to play RE3 again because it's been a while since I've done it. And RE3 is an amazing video game. But yeah, this is like a fan patch for the GameCube version because you have to use the Dolphin emulator to do this, to run it. That's what they managed to patch. Something that I think is interesting without falling down too much of a rabbit hole here is when you play it, the inventory is still in the chunky lower resolution, because of the way that Resident Evil games of this era handled interface scaling and things like that. So to quote something here, the textures dumped by Dolphin are generated on the fly for every inventory combination possible. We have no way around these billions of different textures. So like they can't apply the machine learning to it in a reasonable way. So you play with the chunky inventory and then you go into the actual game with this super crisp models, quite frankly, like just amazing textures. I'm super psyched about this. I didn't know about the RE2 version of it, but these people seem to know what they're doing.
Cool.
Yeah.
So RE3 was basically where they said, like, hey, people liked Mr. X, let's make an entire game revolve around that.
Mr. X, I don't know what you mean. Sorry. I thought you said Mr. Rex, like what a magician would do.
No.
That was them saying, yeah, Pursuit is actually good and fun and scary. Let's make a game that is based around that. So that's where Nemesis came from.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And Nemesis also gives it to you, like Mr. Rex does. If by it you mean a fist to the face. He is very intense. Let's see, Ben, how about you?
I got no story this week.
Attaboy.
I did not see anything relevant. Yeah. Well, there's Prime Days going on today and tomorrow, but that doesn't really do anything for people on Friday. So
I shamefully bought something.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I normally wouldn't just because it just out of a misguided act of protest. Because I think the idea of Prime Day is stupid. However, my grandma needs another Echo for her new house. Because if she falls over or needs help, she can just say, code word, help. And it alerts the entire house and also alerts me. So,
yeah.
See, yeah. I feel like Prime Day is fascinating in that it's an image into how Amazon thinks people should use their product. In terms of like you should either be A, buying our products, or B, buying like random shit without caring what you get as long as it's in the same general category of what you wanted. And I feel like that really illustrates the core problems with the system.
Yeah, capitalism, it is misguided in some regards. Don't at me. And then David, how about you?
Yeah, so apparently, unbeknownst to me, Blizzard recently, relatively recently, a year or two ago, released a HD remake of StarCraft.
Mm-hmm.
And they have now released, I believe, through another company, but this is their official product, a add-on DLC type thing that converts the entire game into a cartoon style. So every single art asset is redone. All of the like talking heads are animated. All of the units are little cartoon peoples. Everything. The only thing from looking at the pictures, I guess, is the actual cutscenes,
mm-hmm.
which apparently are displayed in instead as like little cartoon people sitting in a theater watching the cutscenes.
That is so good. There's what, like 45 minutes to an hour of FMV in StarCraft. It'd be unrealistic to expect them to produce that. That's really expensive.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So, although I'm a little disappointed they didn't like do some sort of crazy demake of it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, have it be like a slideshow, type style, or something just crazy and
even that's
silly.
Even that's really expensive, that amount of illustration.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally, yeah. Would. Yeah. It would be fun to see the ridiculous. But yeah.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah. Like overall, it's actually amazing the degree to which I'd recommend, if people are interested, pull up the pictures, because this is very much, it doesn't look like it's like, someone took in StarCraft and like swapped out the assets. It looks like someone made, a completely different real-time strategy game that was built from the ground up to be cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, it's straight up StarCraft.
That's remarkable. Like the idea of an upscaled StarCraft, cool. Like, I like that more people are able to play that game. It has not fallen into irrelevance and being unrunnable. This has done more to make me interested in playing that version of StarCraft than that version of StarCraft actually existing in the first place. This looks super cute.
Something I would love, which you can't actually do, but I think would be amazing, is if the recordings of esports were actual data recordings, so mm-hmm. that I could just switch on and like watch the tournament in cartoon mode.
Oh yeah. So if it wasn't just an MP4, but it was just a straight replay file dumped from the match.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So something else I'm not gonna go into a lot, but just one of the boards I follow is Hacker News. It's real popular.
You brought stories from there before,
right? Exactly. And so there's a story recently just discussing, it's sort of a Reddit type thing, just discussing the current state of Google's AI for playing StarCraft 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting. I feel like a lot of people would dig it, particularly the comment section on it, because it's a lot of people discussing in very in-depth the nuance of like, what exactly would you need to limit and how in order to put the machine on an even playing field. So like the things where basically initially they just restricted kind of moves per second or whatever, or moves per minute.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up being like revealing like, it's actually in a lot of ways more about, say, like reaction time or like, precision of clicks, those sorts of things. So it's really interesting, almost in kind of a, good games done quick type of a thing, where you can kind of read it and voyeuristically get a lot of insight into the competitive community in a way that's a lot of fun.
Hmm. Yeah, please, but please, if you haven't already, because Slack is being a mean little boy for me today, share a link to that so I can look at it and share it, because that kind of thing is real cool. Cool. We've been going for a while. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel buttoned.
Yes. The credit. Thank you.
Do you really?
I actually feel dragon skulls, but.
Yeah. I'm playing with a box of wine right now.
Well, and apparently, I mean, like, human skulls 5 miles away, too.
Jesus.
Yes, this is true. It's true. Well, I mean, like, look in the Slack. You'll see what I mean.
There's
a thing.
Yeah. So thank you so much for listening to level number 292. So happy to have you here. Happy to have you back here, Jala.
Yay.
It's fun. So people who are watching or listening, rather, they generally know what to do. Probably first off, please come back next week. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast to get alerts about the multiplayer questions when they go up on Mondays. And please leave a rating or review. It's been a little while since we've had one, and we do see those when they come through, and they are appreciated. And I think that's generally the big stuff. Yeah, just come back next time. Yeah, so I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckVTV.
I have been David Meismith. Maybe I won't be tomorrow.
just pick forever. Up, leave this town. Yeah.
I am forever Jala-chan in places.
I'm Ben Merkel. I'm Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
Yep, and stick around for some titles. Yeah, because this is about family stuff. This can be in the after show. Jolly, your story about a person finding human remains, A, horrifying. B, several years ago, my uncle found a dead body in his backyard that had been there for a while. He like came back and it was in really bad shape, and he had taken a picture of it and sent a. Just wrote a funny caption on it. He's a police officer, so he's not necessarily as sensitized to that. Sent it to my stepdad. And my stepdad just kind of like sent it to all the, like put out a, like a mass text saying, how funny is this? Like a picture of a dead body. And I was like, I had to pull my stepdad aside and say, hey, if your brother shares that with you, that's fine. But you have to understand how fucked up it is to share a picture of a dead body with people who might not be expecting that to be their day today.
Yeah.
It was kind of a shitty thing to do.
Yeah.
Even worse if somebody knows the dead body.
Right. Yeah. I don't think it was anybody you shared it with knew what it was, but it's like, I don't know. I don't know about you guys. At that point, I had not seen a dead body.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, by the way, I linked my friend's Instagram photos of Scotland.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Look at that. Yeah, I'll collapse it.
Okay.
There. So there, you can follow the link if you so desire.
Okay.
So
go ahead.
So similarly to just like random things where like something's been part of someone's. Life for a long time, and so they just bring it up way too casually. My first job when I was down in Alabama, one of my coworkers, basically his daughter at one point was almost killed by an axe murderer.
Holy shit.
So it was a thing where, like, he basically got an axe and killed his family, and then, like, they were, I don't know, neighbors, something like that, and was like running through the yard, still covered in blood, and like ran into her. And like a combination of like, luckily, like he maybe sort of liked her, that sort of thing. And like, and she was savvy enough to be like, hey, there's someone You know, covered in blood. No, I'm not going to go with you. So, yeah. Like, nothing happened, but still completely random to, like, meet someone that's like, oh, yeah, you know, an axe murderer actually played a significant role in, you know, one of my life stories.
That's fucking awful.
Yeah.
Let's do titles so we can
get it. Yeah, I'm really sorry. That was random.
No, that's fine. I also brought up a macabre story. I've got two. I've got Missouri Hello and Born in the Deadliness.
I also have Born into Deadliness.
Okay.
Okay, so I really like Missouri Hello, and I didn't have Born into Deadliness, but I had Latent Deadliness Inside.
Okay.
Which I feel like is kind of a riff on the same idea.
Okay. Jello, what other titles did you have?
That word, dungeons. Like when David could not pronounce chalice.
Yes.
To save his soul.
That is very good.
And then
save
anything.
My soul or my blood.
Yes. And then anything heisty.
Okay. What else did you have, David?
I had dogs jumping in all the windows. and bandicooting.
Okay. Ben?
I have a Missouri Hello. Okay. I have blindsided by people being awful. I exercise everything, including violence.
Okay.
I have deterministic jumps.
Oh yeah, I also had that, and then I deleted it because I thought it sounded kind of boring. But sorry.
And then I have consider, like, do.
The DOE or DOE?
DO.
Okay. Oh yeah, not DO. Yeah. Consider, like, do. What was the context on that one?
That was your eat, pray, love.
Oh, consider, yeah. Like, do. Yeah. The initial vote getter would be Born into Deadliness. Missouri Hello got the same number of votes. Also determined as it jumps kind of one and a quarter. The one that everybody laughed at was dogs jumping in all the windows.
The other one, I have to say, the one I would most want on a t-shirt would be I exercise everything, including violence, for what that's worth.
That's My worry about that is it is quite lengthy.
Good point.
Yes. Who wants to make an impassioned play?
I have no passion.
Jala?
We've done really long titles before, but that's okay. I don't have any opinion about.
I feel like
whatever. I like the exercising one, but I also said it, so of course I like my own thing that I said. Yeah. So. You know, I'm not going to fight for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to the exercising, I would also maybe pitch, like, we did spend a significant amount of time talking about the random deadliness stuff.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Born into Deadliness is good. I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's do. Okay. Well, I'm going to go to bed. I would recommend everybody do likewise, except Ben. I guess it's like 7 there. So,
yeah. I'll go eventually, though.
I'm going to eat and play a dungeon and real quick because it's only about 5 minutes to do so. And cool. Then I will go to sleep.
Cool. All right. Take care, everybody.
All right. Night.
Thanks for being on.